Okay. Welcome to Narkis. This Shabbat, July 7th. It's nice to see you all, some new faces. Hi. Our texts today are written on the board. We're going through the triennial parasha, so a slower pace of the normal Torah section for the week. And these are readings that go way, way back to around Jesus' time. And so we're looking at these sections. We call the number 16 the main course, and Hosea 10:2 is what I call the dessert. They have been paired together, and one of the things we're asking ourselves in this Bible study is why? Why was Hosea 2 chosen to go with Numbers? How does it influence our understanding of the Numbers section? And or maybe how does the Numbers influence our understanding of Hosea 10:2? So by putting them together, you see it in a certain light. And of course, we start by reading the text, making sure we're all reading through it and paying attention to the details, and then we'll read the other text and see together what we can find from these selections. So maybe I'll just say a word of prayer, and then Gemma, you'll start reading. Lord, thank you for your Shabbat, and thank you for bringing us here. Thank you that it's your grace that lets any of us stand. And wherever we've been put by you, we just want to do our job the best we can for your glory. I pray you'd speak to each person here and give us something new today from your word, and let it impact our life in a new way. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
So
Numbers chapter 16.
Yeah.
Now Korah, the son of Issachar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan, Abiram, and the sons of Eliab, and all the sons of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. And they rose up before Moses with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, representatives of the congregation, men of renown. They gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves among the assembly of the Lord?" So when Moses heard it, he fell on his face, and he spoke to Korah and all the company, saying, "Tomorrow morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near to him. That one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him. Do this. Take censers, Korah and all your company. Put fire in them and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Lord chooses is the Holy One. You take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Levi." Mm-hmm. Have you got it in English? Mm-hmm. So read on.
And Moses said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi. Is it too small a thing for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do service in the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to minister to them, and that he has brought you near him and all your brothers and sons of Levi with you? And would you seek the priesthood also? Therefore, it is against the Lord that you and all your company have gathered together. What is Aaron that you grumble against him?"
Then Moses sent a summons to Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, but they said, "We will not come up. Is it not enough that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to have us die in the wilderness? But you have also lorded over us. Indeed, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor have you given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. Would you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up.
Moses was very angry and he said to the Lord, "Have no respect for their offering. I have not taken so much as one donkey from them, nor have I harmed any one of them." Then Moses said to Korah, "You and all your company present yourselves before the Lord, you and they and Aaron tomorrow. And each of you take his censer, put incense in it, and then each of you present his censer before the Lord. 250 censers, along with you and Aaron, each of you with his censer." So everyone took his censer, put fire in it, and set incense on it, and stood at the entrance of the tent of meeting with Moses and Aaron. When Korah assembled the whole assembly against them at the entrance of the tent of meeting, then the glory of the Lord appeared to the whole community.
Whoever has English can read next, yeah.
The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Separate yourselves from this assembly, so I can put an end to them at once." But Moses and Aaron fell face down and cried out, "O God, God of the spirits of all mankind, will you be angry with the entire assembly when only one man sins?" Then the Lord said to Moses, "Say to the assembly, move away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram."
Moses got up and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. He warned the assembly, "Move back from the tents of these wicked men. Do not touch anything belonging to them, or you will be swept away because of all their sins." So they moved away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Dathan and Abiram had come out and were standing with their wives, children, and little ones at the entrances to their tents.
And Moses said, "This is how you will know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them by the Lord. If these men die a natural death, or if they share the fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord does something entirely new, and the earth opens its mountains, falls upon them along with all that they have, and they go down alive to the grave, then you will know that these men have despised the Lord." When he had finished speaking all these words, the ground that was under them split open, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them, along with their households and all of Korah's men and all their goods. They and all they had went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed over them, so they perished from among their community.
And all Israel who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, "Lest the earth swallow us up." And fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men offering the incense. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, to take up the censer out of the blaze. Then scatter the fire far and wide, for they have become holy. As for the censers of these men who have sinned at the cost of their lives, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar. For they offered them before the Lord, and they became holy. Thus they shall be assigned to the people of Israel." So Eleazar the priest took the bronze censers, which those who were burned had offered, and they were hammered out as a covering for the altar, to be a reminder to the people of Israel, so that no outsider who was not of the descendants of Aaron should draw near to burn incense before the Lord, lest he become like Korah and his company, as the Lord said to him through Moses.
Maybe, Gary, you know, you have it. You can read over there. Yes, please. Verse 6.
Okay. On the next day, all the congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, saying, "You have killed the people of the Lord." Now it happened, when the congregation had gathered against Moses and Aaron, that they turned toward the tabernacle of meeting, and suddenly the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Then Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of meeting.
Anyone else? Maybe Sheila, do you want to read again?
And the Lord spoke to Moses, "Get away from this community so that I can consume them in an instant." But they threw themselves down with their faces to the ground. Then Moses said to Aaron, "Take the censer, put burning coals from the altar in it, place incense on it, and go quickly into the assembly and make atonement for them, for wrath has gone out from the Lord, the plague has he kept." So Aaron did, and Moses, as Moses commanded, and ran into the middle of the assembly
Right. So,
wow.
Wow, yeah. We have a very artistic weaving together of events. It's kind of hard to keep your mind on track of all of them. So let's try to write it out. I'm going to do one little thing for you on the board.
I'm going to do Levi.
What is the whole problem here in chapter 17? What is the issue?
Rebellion.
Yeah, but more specifically, about what?
Leadership.
Leadership. And who's supposed to do what? And so you have Levi, the sons of Levi. Who can give me one of the sons of Levi? What's their names? Okay, the direct sons of Levi, yeah? Kehat. I'm going to put Kehat in the middle. Oh, sorry. Here. Kehat. What's another one?
Merari.
And the third?
Gershon.
Okay. We've seen these names already because we've been reading through Numbers, and of course how the people camp is determined by their families. What job they have in carrying the utensils for the tabernacle is determined by the families. So out of Kehat, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. We have four sons. Yitzhar. I don't know how you say it in your Hebron. Uziel. Okay. And over here is the one that's interesting. Amram. That's where we get Moshe and Aaron, Moses and Aaron. Okay. So, under Yitzhar, we also have three sons. Korah, Nefeg, and Zichri. Zichri, Nefeg, Korah. Sorry, that's Amram. Okay, and then Hebron, I don't have, it's Mishael, the Elzaphan, and Sitri. So he also has three sons, but I don't think they're mentioned in the text, so I'm not going to bother writing them. Okay, so what do we notice about this? These are all sons of Levi, and they all have jobs, but the real priesthood is out of Kehat, right? So these people are special. They're not just nobody. They're special. They've been specially chosen. And if you see in the very beginning of our chapter 16, what does it say? Who is complaining against Moses and Aaron? Korach, and Datan and Aviram, and On. And it says that they are Kri'e Moed. They are called out for Moed. Moadim are for holidays, special occasions. Like, they have a special job. And they are Anshe Shen. They are people of a name. People know them. They have a status. We've talked a lot about the Exodus 18 passage where Jethro gives Moses the advice to delegate to leaders, and we compared that to earlier chapters in Numbers. So we've already been dealing with this issue of Moses and leadership. And how does this passage relate to that? I'm not sure, But the people that are going against Moses here, my point is that they're not just average Joes. They are leaders, and they have some claim to status because they are from Kehat. So they are kind of special. And if you look down here, you have Amram, Yitzhak, they're brothers, right? So Amram's sons are Moses and Aaron. You have Miriam here. Yitzhak's sons, so Korah. So Korah, these guys are cousins, right? They're the same generation. It's not like some little punk saying, hey, Moses, who are you? You're like an old fogey, get out of the way. I'm strong, I want to rule. They are similar age, they're similar, they could be similar stature. So that's the whole claim here. Korah is saying, what makes you so special? Aren't we also called by God? And the answer is yes, they are. They're from Kehat, and they have special jobs. But what is the job that they're asking for?
Leadership as against priesthood.
They're asking for a higher rank in the priesthood.
A higher rank in priesthood.
Yes.
Not separate from it.
Right. Well, there are levels of priesthood. And in the middle, the thing only a priest can do is what? What's like the at the top? It says in the text here. Is what? Okay, so the Holy of Holies, you have the high priest who goes in on the Day of Atonement, yes? And then one rank down from that?
The incense on the altar.
Incense. What is a big deal? It's incense. Lehaktir ktoret. To burn incense before the Lord. This is one of the top jobs of a priest. Where else in the Bible can you think of that this same issue is being contested? Someone else is trying to burn incense before the Lord.
A strange fire.
Okay, strange fire, you could say. It doesn't specifically mention incense there, but you're right. There is fire as one of the themes in this text. And those are the two sons of Moses that get killed as a result of their strange fire.
The soul business.
How about later generations?
Saul?
No,
Saul sacrificed when he wasn't supposed to. That wasn't.
You're right, but that was a meat sacrifice, that wasn't incense.
Right.
I'm thinking specifically burning incense before the Lord. Think later generations than Saul. Who? What?
Zechariah.
Not that late. Back up, but you're on the right path.
Uzziahu.
Do you remember Uzziahu?
Mm-hmm.
He's got two names. He's got Azariahu and Uzziahu, depending on if you're reading Kings or Chronicles. If you look in Chronicles 26, let's see. Sorry, let me find it. Should be 2 Chronicles 26. Okay. Uzziahu came to power when he was 16 years old because his father was kidnapped and brought to the northern kingdom. So he was a co-regent for a while. Later on, his father returned and the people conspired against him, and so his father went away, ran away to Lachish. They found him there, lynched him, and brought him back, buried him. And then Uzziahu became the sole regent. That means the only guy ruling. And we can guess from his name that he was very strong. Right? Why? What does his name mean? Oz means strength, might. Oz. Ein. Oz. Yahu is God's shortened name. You put it together, Uzziahu. God is my strength, strong, right? And if you notice, all the things Uzziahu does in his reign, he's strong. He recaptures things. He recaptures goes into the Philistine area and recaptures it for Judah. He goes all the way to Eilat. This is a strong king of Judah. So, oftentimes when you have power, it goes to your head. Notice in 2 Chronicles 26:9, Uzziahu built and fortified towers in Jerusalem. He made him strong, or he made him, he dug many cisterns. Okay, he had all this big army, and it gives you all his strength and everything he supplied them with. Skip down to verse 16. As his strength rose, his heart became corrupted, and he rebelled against God, or he was unfaithful. Uma'al. He was unfaithful against the Lord, and he came into the temple to do what? To burn incense on the incense altar. Okay. So the text tells us right here why this happened. As he became stronger, he figured, I deserve this. I'm strong. I'm big. This should be mine as well. Why should there be something that I'm not allowed to do? Because I'm king, right? So he goes in to burn incense, and what do the priests tell him? It is not proper for you, Uzziahu, to offer incense to the Lord. That is the responsibility of the priests, the descendants of Aaron, who are consecrated to offer incense. Okay? So even in 2 Chronicles, there's a recognition that not just any priest, descendants of Aaron, who are consecrated. Like, there are certain people who are supposed to do this, and if you're not one of those people and you do it, you're going against God. And it's a big deal. So what happens to Uzziahu? He broke out in leprosy. Or we translate it leprosy. It is not leprosy as in Hansen's disease. It is a skin disease, tzara'at. It was a contagious skin disease and considered to be incurable, although we do have prescriptions in Leviticus for if and when it's cured. So again, probably not Hansen's disease. It might also be a name for several diseases, but a very serious disease. And what else about tzara'at? If you remember back to Leviticus, what happens if you get tzara'at?
Put outside the camp.
You're put outside the camp because you are?
Unclean.
You're unclean. You're ceremonially unclean. Next to childbirth, this is probably the biggest ceremonial uncleanliness you could have. It lasts 7 days. Or not even just 7 days. It might last forever if after 7 days you check it and it's still not gone. So it's a serious uncleanliness. And it's in the middle of him trying to usurp the incense that this happens. It's very dramatic. It says, and tzara'at broke out on his forehead before the priests in the house of the Lord as he was on the incense altar. So it's like something just started breaking out right there in front of them. So it's kind of a dramatic miracle, you could say. Not a pleasant miracle for Uzziahu. If you go, have you been to Ramat Rachel, the kibbutz? Who here has been there? Okay. If you go there, it's one of the places, we found a palace dating to around the time of Uzziahu. It was in the kings of Judah time. And it seems to be a palace based on the dimensions. We can find a big courtyard, and it has capitals with the same thing on your 5-shekel bill, like that. Sorry, not 5-shekel bill, 5-shekel coin. And why would there be an old palace there, way far away from City of David? Maybe, because someone like Uzziahu was a king and couldn't be in the city anymore and needed to be outside. In the text, it says he was in the Beit Hofshit. He was in a free, the house of the free area.
Can you write up the word for leprosy for me?
Sara'at. So he may have lived out his days at Ramat Rachel until he died. So a big deal, we have the story in 2 Chronicles. And again, it's a power issue. And it's a who has God set aside to do what? And there's this subtle, written between the lines, it's not based on logic. Right? Because here, there's nothing necessarily any better than Moses and Aaron from Korah and these guys. They're cousins. They're priests. They're sons of Levi. In Uzziahu's case, he wasn't even a son of Levi, so he's even a further jump away. But yet, they tried to usurp power that wasn't theirs. Or they tried to take on a calling that God didn't give them.
Was that because things were not going well?
I mean, it could be. Have things been going well in the desert? I mean, if you put yourself in their generation, they are complaining. And you see two complaints. One is you're taking on too much authority to Moses and Aaron. That was the first complaint. Like, how are you better than us? And then the second complaint was you haven't led us to the land of milk and honey, which, of course, they tried to do, and the people wouldn't go in, and so they're back in the desert. So all these complaints, there's an element of truth to it, but on the other hand, it's going against what God had set up.
It's quite profound, isn't it? Because in terms of where we are today, we rebel against God's authority. Why should X do what do X?
Yeah.
I'm just as good as he is. Why can't I do that? On all sorts of levels.
Right. And Moses himself says, when you, like, there's a series of miracles, signs, that differentiate Moses and Aaron from the other people. And his whole argument is, look, it's not from my heart. It's not my will, actually, that I'm trying to do anyway. It's not that I wanted the power, and so that's why I am where I am. I simply was put there. Like, so I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm not just lording it over you as you are contesting. I'm simply trying to fulfill my duty. Okay, so
is this after the business of striking, speaking, whatever he wasn't supposed to do it, that he loses it with a rock? I've lost track of the geography. I mean, the time thing.
Here it's before, in Numbers.
This is before.
Yeah.
Right.
The problem when it comes to chronology is we have different chronologies a little bit.
No,
if you're following Exodus or Numbers.
I was just trying to think, you know.
In the Numbers framework, chapter 20 is where he's supposed to speak to the rock, and he does speak to the rock, or he actually speaks to the people, and he says, hey, am I supposed to bring this up?
He loses it.
That's Numbers 20, so that's still ahead of us.
Oh, right.
So we're at number 16, 17.
So at this point, he's sticking with the truth. God has put me in this place, and you guys are out of order.
And actually, there's in the very first verse of our selection, it says, Vaikach Korach. Who here knows what Vaikach means? Who lakach? He took. Interesting. What did he take?
This man.
No, there's nothing given. If you're reading in Hebrew, there's nothing. He took.
He took
Korah. It doesn't say what he took. And so people have to interpret. Well, what does this mean? And he took. And Korach took. And so the interpretation is that his heart took him, He took himself away. Well, there's two interpretations. He took himself away from the community. He set himself apart. And this is seen as a bad thing. You think you're better. You somehow take yourself apart in a way. If you read the Aramaic translation that was done in the early centuries of the last millennium, well, who knows when it was originally done, but it was recorded, you know, the early centuries. They translated hit paleg, he broke off from. For and he took means and he took himself, he broke away from.
What verse is that again?
It's the very first verse of chapter 16. It's the first word, and he took. Now, if you pop over to Job 15:12, let me see if I can find that. Job 15:12. It says, I'll just read it in Hebrew so you can hear the same word. Ma yikachacha libecha. Why has your heart taken you? And in English, I see, why has your heart carried you away? And why do your eyes flash when you turn your rage against God and allow such words to escape from your mouth? Okay? So, the heart is carrying him away in the context of Job. I don't know here if it sounds more like in the context of anger, but it could be prideful anger. It seems in Numbers, it's a pride issue. Right? So they're explaining this word that doesn't have an object. It's just like this hanging thing in Numbers, and they're explaining it by looking at another context where it mentions taking you away, and here it fills in the word heart. And that kind of lines up with 2 Chronicles 26. Where his heart got high. There it literally says, as he got stronger, his heart gava. If you remember the waters of the flood, they got high above the earth. It's that same word, to get high. Okay, so we have this idea of your heart getting high. Not getting high in the English sense. You have to be careful with languages. They mean so many different things. And even in English, to carried away is something else. But I mean your heart uplifting itself. You've decided that you're better than your position.
Pride.
Pride. It's pride.
And your heart doesn't work. You know, it is hard.
Yeah. And as Gemma pointed out, pride is very, very subtle. Because if you were in this generation of Moses and Aaron, it wouldn't be so clear who should be in their place, right? Who says, if I'm in Israel, who says I've heard from God? How do I know Moses really is supposed to be there? How do I know he's not equally as good as him? He probably is equally as good. But, you know, so things are not as black and white as when we look back on these stories. And yet, it's a very serious deal. And Moses says, when you're going against me, it's not me you're going against, it's God. Like, I didn't ask for this position, I'm just there.
You say that, but, I mean, after all, they've come out of Egypt, being very clear, these guys we haven't really heard about before in any serious way.
Dothan and Aviram?
Not seriously. But we all know about Moses and Aaron from the beginning.
Well, we haven't heard about them, but we have heard that Moses has delegated to other leaders.
Well, even
right?
Before that, I mean, who are you? I mean, here, these are the guys who went to Pharaoh, who brought us out of Egypt, who got told by Jethro and so on to delegate and so on and so on. So it's they are somebody. I mean, they may be cousins, and you may not like it, the fact that your cousins are a bit upmarket to you.
Yeah.
But nevertheless,
sure,
they're somebody. So it seems to me that rebellion is not, and they're sort of wanting a bit of the kavod.
Definitely. I mean, they're wanting more than they were given.
Right.
Essentially. That's what boils down to. But there's many different groups here, and we see them all together, so it gets confusing. And there are many different consequences for each group. So it's interesting that they're all told. I don't even know if this all happens at the same time or if it happened in series and they're told at the same time. That doesn't totally matter. But the way it's told to us here, it can be very confusing. So we have Koach and his group, right? Who else do we have? What other names of leaders that are rebelling? I'm gonna erase this and make some more room. Who's rebelling? Give me their names.
Jason.
Okay. Korach. Datan. Abiram.
On.
Which is interesting. He doesn't get any follow-up mention very much. Okay, who else?
Sons of Reuben, but we don't get their names.
Yeah. How many? Yeah, 250 leaders. Actually, it doesn't say those are the sons of Reuben, just 250 leaders. So are all of these people 250, or are there 250 leaders?
Plus.
What?
Plus,
probably.
Yes, it does seem like maybe it happens out at the same time, because you'd have to be stupid to, you know, like the earth opens up, okay, now I just want to say something else.
Yeah. actually, me. Yeah.
Different events, because they are amazing, you read them, you go.
How
you
would
get the point for
you. Right.
My kids do that all the time.
Well, yeah, it can happen. This is a serious rebellion, right? And what's on? What is his claim? Why would he be contesting for power?
A son of Peleg.
Reuben's oldest. There you go.
What?
Yeah, Reuben's oldest. What's this Levi? How should he get this place? I'm the oldest. I'm descendant of the oldest. I should be in charge, right?
Oh, so we're saying that On, the son of Peleg, is a son of Reuben.
That's right. No, we're not saying that. The text is saying that.
I didn't.
We're saying that because he's a firstborn, he's assuming I have a claim to power too.
I didn't read it like that.
And these guys, maybe these were the ones that were put in position by Moses. And if you remember, you know, there was Moses, and then there were leaders of 1,000, leaders of 100, leaders of 50, leaders of 10. So the hierarchy goes down. Who knows? These guys may come from the top echelon of leadership. You know, so this is a very real rebellion. And it's dealt with very drastically. But we have named to me all the things that happen and who they happen to. Because let's just get some order here. So what happens in verse 4? Who's Moses talking to?
Oh, then
Okay, so first what he's dealing with is Korach. And what is the test here for Korach? Incense. So you're going to have censers, and you're going to put fire in it. So this ties back to who is mentioning strange fire. Yeah. And then the one God has sanctified is going to be made obvious.
And I think it says wherein all his company.
Right. And so then you can connect him maybe to the 250 leaders. Not all those connections are clear. I'm trying to interpret. Eliav. He is that is a good question. He is part of the priesthood, right? Not every generation is mentioned. And it's so easy for these names that aren't Moses and Aaron to just like fall into nothingness. So
does say Korah and all your companies. So
yes.
It sounds like Korah and the whole bang shoot.
Right.
Do we have to be very specific about...
Well, the interesting thing is that several different things happen as a consequence, and they seem to be differentiating. But you're right, it is as if it's all one
right.
big community together. Okay. So, and you see Moses thing back. They said, you took too much upon yourself. So he says the back, you guys take too much upon yourselves.
Right.
Okay.
He was adding them into the Korah group in their censors, and they refused to come up. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say they have censors.
No, but that's going to be their sign the next day, that everyone's going to have censors and put fire on it, and then God's going to make one person holy. Does it say how? No. So it's kind of like... we're in expectancy. We don't know what's going to happen with all this fire in the censers. Will one have some kind of smoke come up from it? We don't know. Looking back, we find out that like fire comes out and consumes people.
It's a bit like the Elijah story with the Baals. I mean, it's quite different, but it's the same sort of principle, that the fire is going to be symbolic in some way.
Yeah. Well, fire is often a symbol of holiness.
Yeah, and cleansing, getting rid of rebellion.
Right. And in the case of Moses' sons, they were also killed by fire. Sorry, Aaron's sons, they were also killed by fire.
Right. So
when they brought strange fire.
So when you bring, when you're in rebellion, when you are flying in the face of the Almighty, then there is fire, which is...
There can be, yeah.
Which is cleansing, it's judgment, it's a whole bunch of things.
Yeah. So it seems like Korah and the 250 are being put together, because we keep having mention of 250 censers. And this is going to be a test of incense fire. And then Moses speaks to everybody and say, separate yourself out from this community. In verse 20 of chapter 16. But what's also interesting is look at verse 22. In what's confusing is when they say to separate yourselves among this community, who are they talking about?
The Lord said that, though. He told Moses and Aaron to separate.
Right, right. But... okay, so the Lord's telling Moses and Aaron, you stand to the side, I will zap them all. Yeah. And so then they fall with their faces to the ground and they say, you know, if one man sins, will you be angry with everybody? And there you get the prophet's heart where you're pleading on behalf of the people. So, yeah, and notice he says if one man sins. It's not one man here. He's giving them many benefits of the doubt and saying basically some people are rebelling, but not everybody. There's still innocent people out there. Don't be mad with all of them. So he's actually choosing to see the positive here, and he is acting within the heart of a prophet and
so
pleading
although,
with God
so although,
to have mercy.
So although Moses pleads with God and sees this as one man, and we can say that's the heart of a prophet, when God speaks back, he basically protects, again, God has already said, you separate yourselves, Moses and Aaron.
Right.
And now he's saying, you separate yourselves from these three.
Exactly. And now, who does he name?
Korah, Dathan.
In verse 24. Korah,
Dathan
and Abiram. Okay, so these guys need to step away. Or the community, these people you're pleading for, Aaron and Moses, they need to get themselves away from these guys and everything they belong, everything that belongs to them. So they do. Right?
Yes.
Okay, so then what happens? So each one of those people stood at the entrance of their tent, and then Moses says another sign. Okay, again, the timing is weird here. Have they prepared their incense things yet or not? Is this the day of the incense or is this the day before? Because remember he says each man has to come with their fire pan tomorrow, right? It never actually said tomorrow happens, so we don't know. Is the earth swallowing them before the fire? It all kind of seems like the same event. Right, yeah, that's true. That's true. So now they're standing in their homes. And Moses says, look, I'm not in my position because it was in my heart to do. Like, I didn't decide this.
Oh, tomorrow, all your companies be present before the Lord with your censers.
Right, well, that was earlier what he said.
Yeah.
But the text hasn't told us this is tomorrow. It hasn't said now it's tomorrow. It's just continued on with another element. And now you have these three guys standing in their tent away. The whole community is separated. And Moses says, look, if they die natural death, I wasn't sent by the Lord. So they have to die. But if they go down alive to the grave, then God sent me.
Right.
That's a huge, big sign. I mean, whoa.
Doesn't it in verse 18 say they took their censers and they stood?
Let's go back to 18.
Yeah, it does.
There you go. Okay. So we're in.
They're standing there with
they took their censers.
And they put fire on them.
So it just doesn't mention the tomorrow part, but presumably a day has passed, they woke up, and they've gotten their censers ready. And it's at that point that they still don't come forward, or some of them don't come forward. So they're standing in their tents, and that's when Moses says, okay, get away, they're going to die, and this is how they're going to die. And it is very drastic. And if you notice, in verse 30, what does it tell you? If the Lord does something entirely new, do you see that? Entirely new? It says in Hebrew, Ve'im bri'a yivra Adonai. Livro is to create. It is something only God does. Humans can't create like this. Humans can form. There's other words for create. This is the one that only God does. If a creation, God creates. So this is the closest word we have in the Bible for miracle. Other than sign. I mean, a lot of things can be a sign. I can draw something and it's a sign. Or it can be an abstract sign. But this is kind of like a miracle. If the ground opens up and swallows it. And that is, in fact, a miracle. I mean, that would be incredibly crazy to witness. Good. So he's going to do this sign, and in fact, the ground opens up and swallows them. And they all went down alive to Sheol. Okay, so what happens next? Everyone around them starts doing what? Shouting. Running away, yeah. Because they don't want the ground to swallow them too. Okay, that's natural. And then look at number 35. What happens? Okay, so there's a Mishkan. There's the tabernacle in the middle. And presumably they were supposed to come to the Mishkan with their censers. And instead, you know, those three stayed in their own tents. So now you have fire leaving the tabernacle and eating up who?
The 250 men. So they obviously went...
Okay, so these guys are gone.
So it almost sounds like it happened the next day, like punishment.
Well, it's
or at the same time.
They were standing at the doorway of the tent of meeting in verse 18, and then here, fire came forth from the Lord.
Yeah.
And consumed them.
They get swallowed. These guys get burned. So the fire that they're claiming that they are eligible to offer actually burns them, or fire comes out. It's kind of a reversal of their claim. No, you're not eligible, and now you're going to burn. And it tells us later in verse 38 that all those censers were then collected and kept to be a reminder for people. They hammered them out, put them on the altar so that people could always remember God's authority and not to mess with it. But what else is going on? What else is going on? It says the next day everybody murmured against Moses and Aaron. Why?
You killed everybody.
So now, like, the first complaint, they say, well, you took us out of the land of milk and honey, referring to Egypt. And now the complaint is, well, you killed all, not just people, the people of the Lord, right? So again, there's this idea, we're all the people of the Lord, we're all holy, how dare you kill people? As if, again, it's Moses' idea that they die. So they're complaining again, and what happens?
They come.
What? So this is a crazy section here. We got the earth swallowing people, we have burning, and we have a plague as consequences for the different complaints and protesting.
Is it significant that the glory of the Lord appears in verse 42?
I mean, I'd say absolutely.
Before the plague.
Because again, Moses and Aaron turn to God, to the tent of meeting. And the glory, which is God's somehow partially visible presence, like when the glory comes down, people can perceive it somehow. I don't know exactly what it looked like, or, you know, you could say maybe it was a cloud, maybe it shined a certain way. And sometimes it's so thick, people can't even go in the tent when it's there. So this is a very palpable glory.
But earlier on in verse 19, the glory of the Lord appeared to everybody. Mm-hmm. They saw it.
Yeah.
And they still go on with their rebellion.
Yeah.
And then again in verse 42, you have it.
Yeah. And notice again, God says, get away from this community. And actually says, Heromu, be lifted up from this community, and I'm going to wipe them out in an instant. Ke raga, rega, is in a moment. And what is their response again? What do Moses and Aaron do? They fall on their faces, pleading for who? Yeah, so this is pretty amazing. So they've just endured one day of total chaos and rebellion, and yet they're still on the people's side. You know, it's pretty amazing. I think most people in their situation wouldn't have that kind of patience. So then Moses tells Aaron, and it's interesting, it doesn't really say God told Moses to tell Aaron, but I mean, we can assume that God gave him that idea. Take a censer and put coals in it from the altar and go out and atone for them. So now it's interesting because here, when fire came out from Mishkan, it killed people. And now Aaron's taking that same fire out to the people, and it's going to have the opposite effect.
But Aaron is the high priest.
He is the high priest,
and
exactly.
He, so
and he has sanctioned to do that.
Moses is really reaffirming his proper role.
Yeah. And so you have the picture of Aaron being the perfect priest in verse 48. He's standing between the dead and the living. And he's trying to stop the plague, which is a punishment on the people. So he's actually pleading for grace in spite of everything. And so the plague stops. And then you have the staff, right? So if that's not enough for confirming their position, you have one more thing. And that's each person has their staff, and that's a symbol of their status, right? All leaders have a staff.
Where are you?
In chapter 17, the beginning. And so every tribal leader has a staff, and they're going to write their name on it. They're going to put it before the Lord. And, of course, we know the story. One blossoms, and that is Aaron's. And it's interesting in all of this, it's all about Aaron. Right? It's not so much about Moses. It's Aaron, because it's through Aaron that you have the high priest and their descendants. Okay. And so, what do we have from all these stories? What is our reminder at the very end for generations? Yeah, follow those that are called. And if you were in the desert, you'd be seeing the censer plates, the gold from the censers would be on the altar reminding you. And then the budding staff of Aaron that is kept as a reminder. So in the future, if you want to contest why do you think you're so great, you have those things to look back to. And that reminds you of these crazy and terrible events. Okay, so we don't have a lot of time. Let's pop really quickly to Hosea. Okay, Hosea is a wonderful prophet. As we know, prophecy, or as we might not know, prophecy is oftentimes very poetic. There is a scale. If prose is here and prophecy is here, sorry, poetry is here, prophecy can be here and it can be here. And a lot of the time what makes it so powerful is that it is poetic. You can make play on words. Like Isaiah's song to the vineyard. He says, I looked for mishpat and instead I got mispach. You don't even have to know Hebrew to hear the similarity, right? And so the people who understand, it's like, whoa, mishpat, mispach. And so it punches. It means something then. So, okay, so Hosea is very poetic, so much so that it is, in fact, hard to understand him sometimes. But he has some of the most beautiful prophecies, and so almost, you would say, evangelical. To know the Lord, to experience him, to be intimate with him is like so Hosea's whole call. But look at verse 2. And what does he start with here? What does it say in verse 2?
Their heart is faithless.
Their heart is what?
Faithless.
Faithless. Okay, interesting. What else do you what do you have?
Divided.
Divided. Okay, nice. Slipping. Deceitful, I like it. Okay.
It says halak.
Halak is divine.
This is nice. Remember what I said about the first word in this chapter? What was it? Was it halak? Vayikach. And how did the Aramaic translate that? He split off from. He separated himself from. So it's interesting. There might be the people who put these two passages together, that may have been the connection in their mind, that separating yourself in a bad way. However, halak, it can have to do with a separate divide. You know, helek is a portion. It's a piece of something. But it's also smooth. You have Jacob contrasted with Esau, right? Jacob's smooth, Esau's hairy. And Esau, the word for hairy is Sa'ir. He is also the father of Se'ir, which is another word for Edom. And Edom sounds like Adom because Esau also has red hair. So there's all these plays on Esau's name. Jacob, he's a person of the tents and he's Halak, right? And if you look in the area of Judah, where Judah borders Edom, you see there's a Har Halak and Har Seir, right? So they're these competing brother. So Halak can also be smooth. It can also be slippery. And so you have all these ways you could interpret Halak, and you have to make a decision. So going with the smooth and slippery, I think I heard over here deceitful, right? Right back there. So that's translating this smooth slippery as a metaphor for deceitful. What did you have, Sheila?
Slipping.
slipping. Also, the NET Bible has slipping. It says their heart is slipping. In other words, it's slipping away from the right place that it should be in.
Devious.
Is devious, okay. And soon they will be punished. And their altars will be, what do you call when you twist an animal's neck to kill them?
Wrung.
Yeah, wring its neck. So their altars are going to have the neck wrung. And their special memorial rocks are going to be robbed. So, again, you have this emphasis on the heart. And I would say that's a key word in our text here as well. And if you remember Uzziah's story, it was an issue of the heart. And it's important to remember in the Bible, the heart is not where you feel things. The heart is where you think. It's where you make decisions. It's your will. It's your attitude. So it might include some feelings, but it is where you decide things. And so when your heart gets proud, you're having thoughts of, hey, I deserve more than I'm getting. So when I say it's a heart issue, it's not just like, oh, I feel this or that. It's what you have chosen to do and think with your life. So we have a heart doing something. Here it's a bad thing. It's slipping away. Here their hearts are rising up. Or what else did it say? I'm forgetting now. What does it say their heart was doing?
Separating.
There you go. So that could be the connection, the separating hearts. And Uzziah's was getting too high. And then in contrast to that, you have Moses and Aaron. And Moses says, it was not from my heart. In other words, I didn't decide this. I didn't want to be where I am. God put me here, basically.
And you said earlier on, God, Moses is the most humble man who ever lived.
Exactly, yeah. And then you don't hear heart in the context of Aaron, but you see what he's decided to do in acting for the people, despite he demonstrates grace and he's fighting for the people before God.
And he's prepared to take back, if you like, the high priest's role, which to some extent has sort of slithered away a bit.
Yeah. So all these things, I guess the message then that pops out at me is, what are you going to decide to do? Where's your heart? Are you going to fully decide to let God be God? Or are you going to secretly try to do your own thing? Whether it be usurp power or do something that's not meant for you to do when it's very clear what you are supposed to do.
It follows on, Sharon. For now, they say, we have no king.
Uh-huh.
Because we did not fear the Lord. As for the king, what would he do for us? Because it's like, again, questioning the authority.
Yeah.
That's another connection, isn't it?
Yeah, questioning the authority. And whose authority is it really? I mean, it's God's authority that he gives to people. Yeah.
Trusting man's work instead of
your
own faith in God.
Right. Trusting man. And again,
in
Hosea's time, I mean, the northern kingdom is thriving. So if you want to follow prosperity gospel, you should assume that they're really being blessed by God. And Hosea's like, that is not the case. And so that's why he's saying in very strong words, this is all going to be smashed. You are not doing things right. And you're not fearing God. Don't think you're not able to be defeated. There's a word for that.
Invincible,
there you go. And it mentions the inhabitants of Samaria will lament over the calf idol. So you remember the northern kingdom set up two calves of gold? And they had a priesthood that was false. Because even if they were serving God, it wasn't serving him the way it had been ordained. in Jerusalem. They set up; they were doing their own thing. So there's that connection too, that Hosea is speaking to a whole kingdom that is essentially following the same path as these guys. So far the ground hasn't opened up, or there has been no big sign. There's been prosperity instead. And so Hosea is warning them that don't believe it, like punishment is coming if you continue, if your heart slips.
It's so confusing though for me.
It is. Yeah.
Somebody else is saying something.
Right?
Yeah. And who should be doing what? And you can read that.
Yeah.
Only in retrospect.
Right. In retrospect, it's so much clearer. And I think it's so easy for us to say, like, why? Those people are so stupid. How did they not get it?
Sometimes we can tell, like, because of who walks in love, the leaders exalted are the ones that were pleading for the rebellious.
Yeah.
I personally don't think they're stupid.
Oh, I think so, too.
I don't think there was... I think it's a wonderful example for us to take and see how God thinks of it. I mean, I think of my own life, even in my marriage, I want to usurp power all the time, you know, but it's not for me to do. And I take it lightly. But God does not take usurping power lightly.
Right, right.
Can I just ask a question? I seem to remember the calm, verse 5, Bet Avon. The oven is actually zero or nothing or something.
A house of vanity or nothingness. And it could be when you refer to something, to call it by its name is giving them too much attention. So you substitute it with a, like you're playing on the name in a negative way. Like I'm not even, you're just a house of nothing. So maybe it's referring to Beit El. You can interpret, but probably one of the religious centers of the north. You have Dan, you have Shomron, Beit El, there are others. Maybe there was a Be'er Sheva, also in the north.
Be'er Sheva in the north?
Maybe. Because many times it talks about Dan ad Be'er Sheva, and the question is, where is that?
All right.
There are a lot of questions, but we know that there were several centers of worship in the north. And I would assume that Beit Avon is referring to one of those, or the high places of Avon, Bamot Beit Avon. So probably referring to Beit El, which is the house of God. So he's saying it's not the house of God, it's the house of vanity, nothingness. But, yeah. All right, so the worship service is about to start.
Thank you.
May our hearts stay in the right place. Shabbat shalom.